Enlightenment is a destructive process. It has nothing to do with becoming better or being happier. Enlightenment is the crumbling away of untruth. It is seeing through the facade of pretense. It is the complete eradication of everything we imagined to be true. And this week's opening quote comes from Adya Shanti. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. Well, it's nice to be back with you folks. Sorry I missed out on doing a show for you last week. So what I've done is I've pre-recorded a show for you this week, which will be played the weekend that I'm actually speaking at the Free Your Mind conference. I am, of course, speaking there on the 17th of April, which is the day after tomorrow, if you happen to be in Philadelphia and happen to be listening to this radio show. After that, there may be a few gigs around the place, and there is definitely one up in Ohio on the 29th as well. And you can find details about that gig on my website, thecrowhouse.com. But it's nice to be back here talking to you again, folks. I'm recording this show from the Amazon jungle again, so you may hear a few insect noises in the background, a few frogs chirping and squeaking and all that sort of stuff. That's what happens when you're in the jungle. And the reason I couldn't do a show for you last week, and the reason why I haven't had much of an online presence in the last week to 10 days, is because I simply haven't had internet, because there just hasn't been any reliable internet available in the jungle. You kind of get a few minutes or maybe even a half an hour here and there, as long as you don't mind waiting 20 minutes for a page to open. But apart from that, it's been virtually non-existent for the last week since I arrived. There's been a few power issues while I've been away, and a bit of damage has been suffered to the internet installation at where I'm staying. So that's why I haven't had much of an online presence in the last week to 10 days, in case anybody was wondering. Something else I'd like to share with you as well, folks, before I get onto the meat of the broadcast, is that I've opened a Patreon account as well for those who would like to donate or make a contribution to the Crow House. It's been very, very difficult to receive contributions from people. So what I've set up is a monthly subscriber thing where you can subscribe as little as $1 a month if you would like to help keep the show on air. I really have exhausted all of my resources, folks, and if people out there would like to keep the show going, it's really going to be up to public support from now on to keep me on air. So I have set that up for those who would like to make some sort of a regular contribution. And it can be, as I said, very small, folks. As little as $1 a month, any contribution, no matter how small, will help to keep the show on the air. And you'll find a link to that on my website, thecrowhouse.com. You just got to click donate on the homepage, and it will take you to the contribution page, or you'll find a link to the Patreon account. If you're watching the show on YouTube, you'll also find a link in the video description and a link on my channel. And I really don't like to bring stuff like this up, folks. I really don't like asking for contributions, but I really have no other option at the moment if I am to continue with the broadcasts. And this is the first time in the 8 years of broadcasting on air that I've ever set up any type of a subscriber thing or asked for contributions, regular contributions or anything like that. And of course, you don't need to subscribe to still get all of the full shows and all the full material that's available in the Crow House. It's just something that I've done out of necessity. And the hope is that if I am able to generate some sort of a subscriber base, then I'll still be able to keep the material available to everybody for free and to keep the broadcasts and the movies coming. That is, of course, the reason I'm back in the Amazon, folks, to work on a new film. Apart from the fact that it's a lot cheaper to live in the third world, and that's really the most viable option available to me at the moment, I really would like to complete a new film by the end of the year. The film I'm intending to work on is, in fact, part two of Transformation, the film that I released in 2012. So I'm really looking forward to getting that done. And I think it's going to be quite timely, folks, because the world has certainly changed since I put out part one of Transformation. And it's interesting how just about everything that I put in that film has been confirmed by recent events. And so I am quite eager to get part two put out. And as I said, hopefully that will be done by the end of the year if I can gather the subscriber base I need to keep going and to actually create the film. And I would also like to finish working on the film that I have half completed, which is a film I started in 2014 about the Amazon. So I'd like to get that done as well. So I've got a lot of projects on, folks. I've got a lot of speaking dates between now and May, but I should be back in the Amazon by the 25th of May. And then I intend to devote the following 6 months solely to working on the films, apart from doing the weekly radio shows. That's probably the plan for the year. Well, that's the plan so far. Anyway, of course, I'm open to suggestion and things always do seem to pop up. So you never know, but at this point, that is the vague plan for the year. And what a year this has been already, ladies and gentlemen. It's the year of the monkey, of course, the year of the trickster. And who knows, that could be why we are seeing so much trickery in the world today. We're certainly seeing things reveal themselves, and a lot of things that are going on just are not what they seem to be. But as I said, folks, it is the year of the monkey and the year of the trickster, and who knows, that could be why we are seeing such an unprecedented amount of weirdness in the world today, and I think we're going to see a lot more of it, and I think we're going to see a lot more things being revealed. But one thing you can do to take advantage of such times, folks, is to look at the things that can be revealed about yourself to yourself. As I said, it's the year of the monkey and the year of the trickster, and we also tend to trick ourselves very often on such occasions, probably not only on such occasions, not only in the year of the monkey, but I would suggest that it may happen a little bit more in this year. I have certainly found it to be the case with myself. And ask yourself, folks, have you been stressed out lately? Have you been having confrontations with people lately? Have you been acting in a reactionary manner lately? I certainly have. It's actually quite interesting, folks. On the flight on the way over here from Australia, you're doing a 12-hour flight and you've kind of got a lot of time to sit and meditate if you can do such a thing in such an environment. Fortunately, I can because I'm sort of kind of used to flying. So when I get into an aircraft and I get into that zone, I don't even really need to watch movies for most of the flight. I can just kind of sit in my space and go into this zone and kind of come out at the end of the flight. And I was able to do a lot of reflection on the flight over, and I realized how reactionary I've been, and I realized how far I'd slipped from my space and from my center. And I realized it was the monkey mind. It was the monkey brain, the reactionary brain that always wants to get into the tit-for-tat and reacts to things in the first manner that comes to mind without necessarily thinking about the situation. And I've seen this with a lot of people as well. I've seen people that I know that are in relationships that are having arguments over the most ridiculous things. There's nothing really to argue about, but it's just the reactionary nature of people. And I've seen it online with so many things, especially in some of the online debates that are happening. I'm seeing huge reactions from people on both sides of any of the debates that you see. And again, it seems to be people reacting from centering themselves in the monkey mind, whether they know they're doing so or not. And perhaps that is something that comes with the year of the monkey. I'm not really up on Chinese astrology that much, but I find these sorts of things interesting. You know, I really never placed too much value on astrology until I had an experience a year or two ago when everything was in a Scorpio moon. And I think I related the story on a show. There was every Scorpio that I knew had a particularly hard time on this particular week when everything was in Scorpio and there was a particular planetary alignment or something happening in the sky. And I started to pay a little bit more attention to these sorts of things. And I find it interesting to see the recent reactionary responses from so many people, myself included, and then to find out that we're in the year of the monkey. And of course, we all know that the monkey mind is the reactionary mind. So it'd be interesting, folks, if you're out there and you're having these issues with people, if you're in a reactionary state with people, perhaps being aware of this particular aspect of this year, that was obviously significant enough for the Chinese culture to actually name a year after this particular mindset. Perhaps there could be something to it. And perhaps if you are aware of this monkey mind creeping into your thought patterns, it will help you not react in a way that perhaps you shouldn't react, and a way that most people, including myself, seem to have been doing lately. Just thought I'd throw that out there in the case that it might help a few people. It certainly has helped me, folks, having this reflection on the aircraft on the way over here. It really put things into a really interesting perspective for me. And I was really able to step back and look at what's been going on in the world and look at the way people have been, again, including myself, and it was just an interesting thing to come across. But I found a certain sense of calm since flying over here. Perhaps it's being back in the Amazon, although I don't think that is just what it is. I've just found a certain sense of calm since having that time to reflect, I suppose. Of course, there is an awful lot going on as well. There's a lot of things I have to deal with that are just coming up. There's actually the very distinct possibility of a rather large and very disturbing announcement that I have to make within the next week or two. Well, I'm anticipating that I have to make anyway. I won't be able to confirm my thoughts until I've had a conference with certain individuals, but that will be occurring this weekend, and so you can expect to hear something about that probably within the next week or two. And that is something that I'm certainly not looking forward to, but it's something that simply needs to be done. But as I said, folks, I think we're going to see more and more of this. I think we're going to see more and more things revealing themselves. And I think we're going to see more and more reactions from people and more reactionary responses from people. My hope is that if people become aware of this monkey mind that seems to be prevalent at the moment, perhaps they won't react in the manner that they are currently doing, or in the manner that first comes to mind anyway. And I think it's actually quite significant that I have something so major to deal with, and I've just gone through a process of reaction and then reflection on the reaction right before I have to deal with something as major as what I've got to deal with. And I think everything happens for a reason, ladies and gentlemen, and that's just the way reality works. If you're open to the messages, then you will always find your path. I really believe this to be true. You know, we may stray from our paths sometimes, and even when we think we are straying from our paths, perhaps we're not. Perhaps that is a lesson that will help serve us on what is about to unfold before us, on a path that we were at that time unaware of. All of these things serve to prepare you folks. All of these things serve as lessons. It's interesting, a lot of the things that I did in my life, being a musician and joining a game clan so I could play with my son when I couldn't get to see him, and all of the things I had to learn Photoshop, and all the things that happened because I joined the game clan, which all gave me the ability to make movies, and how my life as a musician prior to that had given me the ability to research and gather the knowledge I need to put in the movies, and all the things that happened in my life that seemed to be completely unrelated all were necessary for me to do exactly what I'm doing now, and without those skills I wouldn't be able to do it. And it was all a series of preparatory steps, really, when you look at it. You know, if you can look at your life, all of it is in preparation for the path that you are supposed to be on. It's just being aware of when that path reveals itself before you and when you are supposed to step on it. But just choosing to step on it eventually and to realize that all of the what you perceive to be unrelated things that happened in your life and all of the what appeared to be unrelated skills that you obtained along the way all were stepping stones to lead you exactly to where you are now and to give you the skills that you needed to move forward on the next stage of your path in life. I think it's quite interesting how these things happen. It's just making sure that we have the time to reflect, to look at these things and look at how our path unfolds and to see what the past can teach us and to see what lessons we can learn from our past mistakes, because that's what mistakes are for, ladies and gentlemen. That is how we learn. It's interesting, we are so frightened of making mistakes, we're so frightened of messing up in front of people, and yet that is how we learn. And so mistakes can be beautiful things if we are open to the opportunities that they provide, and we are centered within ourselves enough to embrace those opportunities and to see what these mistakes were for. It is a matter of admitting them, it's a matter of seeing them as a lesson. I suppose that is the same thing, really. It's a matter of seeing these mistakes not as mistakes, but as opportunities for learning and opportunities for growth, because really, that's what they are. But not only that, folks, they're also lessons that prepare you for the future. And so, as I was saying, are many things that happen along through your path in life. Many of the things that happen to you, many of the skills you gather, many of the people you meet, all of these things prepare you for a path that you often don't know yet exists, and yet the path is there. It's just that you're not ready to step onto the path. You're not ready to really be yourself because you haven't gathered the skills you need to do so. It's being aware that you are gathering skills along the way. That's what mistakes are for. That's what everybody you meet and everything you do is for. It's to gather a life skill that you will need and can use along your path. Yeah, everything is significant, folks. Everybody that you meet is significant. Every encounter that you have is significant. There's always a lesson in there somewhere, if we are open to it. It's just being aware that that's how life is. That's how the lessons occur. It's the path itself that is the important thing. It's the journey that you take that leads to enlightenment. You can never become enlightened until you take the path. And the path can only be your path. It can't be anybody else's. It's got to be the one that has been designed for you. The one that quite possibly you laid out for yourself. There are many who believe that this is the way it works. Who knows? Maybe it is. But I still do see all of these things as lessons and preparations for finding your path. And all you have to do is be open to the information and to not judge yourself, folks. Allow yourself to mess up. That's the thing. You know, when we mess up, we feel so terrible about it. But you mustn't judge yourself for messing up, because that's what people do. That's how we learn. Other people may judge you, but that's okay. They mess up too. Don't worry about it. Don't judge yourself. Just continue on your path and see the lessons that experience provided for you. You know, when you can begin to see these different aspects of human consciousness, these different aspects of the human mind, the monkey mind, the reptilian brain, the fight or flight mode that we often get into, and you see how these different minds react within ourselves, how the reptilian mind works to put us into fight or flight, how the monkey mind works to put us into a reactionary situation. When you start looking at these sorts of things, you begin to gain a little bit of an understanding of how the predator mind works as well. And it's important to understand this, folks, when dealing with the people who control this world, when dealing with the kakistocracy that's placed themselves in positions of rulership, it's important to understand that these people work from the predator mind. They are essentially predators. That's what they do, and that is the way they think. That's why it really serves no purpose to attempt to appeal to these people's better judgment or to attempt to appeal to their conscience or anything like that, because they simply don't have one, because they are predators and they are doing what predators do. It's the way they think and it's the way they operate in virtually every aspect of what they're doing to this world and what they're doing to the people who inhabit this world, and not only the people, to the animals, to the environment, and to everything. And they really don't care. They're quite happy to watch the world burn as long as they get the sport that they enjoy. That's the way the predator mind works. And often when we respond to the actions of the predator mind, we do it from the monkey mind or from the reptilian mind. We go into fight or flight, or we simply go into a reaction, which is not always the best thing we should be doing. And almost everything this system does and almost everything the government does these days is designed to provoke reaction from the people. You know, they squash you and squash you and squash you further and further and further until you have no other way out other than to react. And this is what happens for many people. And of course, when you react, they say, well, you're creating a disturbance and they arrest you and blah, blah, blah. It all just goes down the way they want it to go down. And they do this, of course, by introducing more and more repressive legislation and delivering it to you in a very calm and nonchalant way. A police officer will come along and fine you for no good reason and do it in a very, very calm way. And if you complain at all, he will accuse you of overreacting and possibly take you off for a psychiatric evaluation or whatever they do. This is the sort of things they're doing in Australia now, folks. So they provoke you with their calmness because they know they are doing something that was completely unreasonable, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it, and so they can be as calm as they want, and the calmer they are, the more you are likely to react. And this, again, folks, is very, very contrived, and it's very, very orchestrated. This is the way they gradually squash people's spirit more and more and more and prevent them from ever really being able to step into themselves. They just take more of their rights away a little bit at a time and do it very, very calmly, and always accuse the people of creating a disturbance if they react in any way or stand up for their rights at all. It's a tried and true method, and it's what they've been doing for a great many years. And it's becoming very, very obvious. Although they're not really being so calm about it these days. Now they know they've virtually taken every right away, especially in countries such as Australia. And so they know that they don't really need to be that calm anymore. They can simply push until you react, and then they can arrest you and fine you and create a nice little revenue cash cow for the system the way they would like everybody to be. There was a show I put out many years ago, folks, called Total Criminalization, where I said that this is what the government wants to do. They want to see everybody as a criminal. They want to put enough legislation in place so that it's possible for everybody to break a law or commit a crime at any minute of the day without even knowing that they're doing so, so that everybody can be criminalized, everybody can have a criminal record, everybody can get an ID stamp and be fingerprinted, and thereby everybody becomes uniform in the eyes of the law. And that's what the government wants. They want a completely uniform, controlled, and surveilled population, and they are working very hard to do it. And most people are too lazy to commit a real crime, and so they have to be tricked into it, and so that is why they introduce more and more legislation to make it possible for people to be able to break the law without even knowing that they're doing so. And they've done this gradually, folks, but they're doing it even more with the internet and all the laws that they're bringing in with the internet as well. I mean, the internet has been a bit of a wolf in sheep's clothing in many ways. It's brought the people together and it's given us the opportunity to share information in a quite dramatic way, ways that we've never had before. But it's also given the government the means by which to monitor everybody and to see what the entire world is thinking. And as I mentioned a few shows ago, a couple of months ago from memory, I believe that this is what the internet has been for. I think this is why they've staged some of the terror attacks they've staged and made them so obvious, things such as 9/11, because it gives them the ability to find out who's thinking clearly and where all the dissidents are and to be able to track their movements via the internet. And now they're bringing in more and more laws regarding the virtual world as well, and they'll be making it possible for everybody to commit a crime at any moment of the day on the internet as well, simply by reading something you're not supposed to read or clicking something you're not supposed to click. And they've really set people up for a fall with a lot of the stuff they've put together on the internet, folks, a lot of the file sharing and all that sort of stuff. They've set people up for a fall with all of this sort of stuff. And right now they are in the process of consolidating their power and linking it all together and getting themselves into a position where they can cross-check and cross-reference everything and just see exactly what everybody is up to and do it globally. Of course, they're able to do this via the mechanism of the war on terror, folks. This is what we saw almost instantaneously as a result of the Brussels attack. We saw immediately a call for more data sharing and more convergence of spying and surveillance networks and data gathering networks with each respective country. The time has come, they are saying, to merge all of these databases together into one huge global surveillance grid that encompasses all aspects, both digital and real-time, real-world surveillance. All as a result of the Brussels attacks and all being done to keep the people safe from the terrible terrorist boogeyman, of course. This is how it's done, folks. Hegelian dialectic, a tried and true formula that seems to work every time. Although the people are at least waking up to it, I think. I think that more and more people are beginning to realize that all of these terror attacks that we're seeing around the world are staged by our very own governments and not by ragtag groups of Islamic extremists. In fact, most are carried out by exactly the opposite. I would say most are carried out by our governments under the auspicious guidance of the State of Israel. And really, this should be clearly seen by everybody, especially the people in the United States. I mean, the incredible size of the Jewish lobby in the United States, the amount of influence the Jewish lobby has over high schools and politics and everything, there is such an incredible effort to exalt the State of Israel and to let everybody know that they must support the State of Israel. And why would you think this is, folks? It's because it is the State of Israel that is responsible for all of the unrest and terrorism and war that's going on in the world, and they need to really push their propaganda mechanism home to the people in order to get away with it. And so far they've been very successful, but I think the world is at last waking up to how much they've actually been played by this one little rogue state in the Middle East, which is run by people who actually have no claim to the state and are not even the real descendants of the people of that area. And it's so clear, folks, even by their own records, when one looks at Oded Yunin's strategy for Israel in the 1980s, there is the war on terror. There is all of the countries that are involved in the war on terror, all of the countries that are being destabilized in the Middle East. And when one looks at the 1930s Kalergi plan for the destruction of the white races of Europe via mass migration, and there we see what is unfolding in Europe today. And it's all been outlined in their very own papers and has been in the public domain for a very long time. Couple these papers together with what we see in the Middle East today and the enormous propaganda program that is really rampant right around the world that is exalting and promoting the actions of Israel, and we begin to see very clearly where all this mayhem and terrorism is coming from. You know that the State of Israel has murdered one Palestinian child every 3 days for the last 13 years, folks, and got away with it? And not only that, but it's arrested or kidnapped 5 Palestinian children a day, every day, for the last 48 years and got away with it. It's kept 1.8 million people in collective punishment, a blatant war crime, since 2007 and got away with it. It's building illegal settlements in occupied territory and creating massive homelessness in a state that it doesn't own and getting away with it. It's shooting children, kidnapping children, harvesting organs, folks. Israel is the biggest seller of organs in the world, most of them illegally harvested, I would suggest, from Palestinians who have been arrested for no apparent reason and dropped into the black hole that is the Israeli prison system. Recently, we've seen children who have had their organs harvested and simply been left and dumped in dumpsters in Israel. This is what is going on. This is what this state is doing, and this is what it gets away with every minute of every day, and nothing is ever done because this state has such a massive influence over world politics that it is simply above the law, and it knows it, and so it just does what it wants while the world sits idly by and watches, and we have all the politicians in the Western world all bought and paid for right from the very beginning and all standing in support of this rogue state and therefore all contributing openly to the devastation and destruction we've seen rampant across this world, and the massive homelessness and all of the human hardship and suffering comes from these very same people who run all Western governments and are attempting to take over what governments they don't already own via the introduction of the very same monetary system and banking system they've used to enslave Western nations. These people are criminals, folks, out-and-out criminals, a rampant kakistocracy that has taken over positions of power on this planet, and it's time that we actually stopped being politically correct, called this out, and actually did something about it, ladies and gentlemen. It's about time we stepped into our humanity and stand up to do what needs to be done. I mean, let's face it, folks, the world is run by criminals, and it's about time we called it and removed the criminals from power and saved this earth and saved this world and saved the human race from the fate that is being laid out before it, because it's not a fate of our making unless we allow it. And I think the time has come for us to take responsibility for ourselves and realize what we are allowing and just stand up and change the direction that we're going. I think it would be very easy to do if we would simply remember who and what we are. But I think we've reached break time here, folks, so I'll leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I'll speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So, yes, folks, I think it's important to gain an understanding of the different minds of man, the monkey mind, the reptilian mind, and, of course, the predator mind, because when you can understand how these minds work, you begin to clearly see that we do have predators that are running this world. And they do like to very much push us and throw it in our face and hope for a response in every little way that they can. Recently, for example, in England, there was a company, I can't remember, an industry, a mining industry or some industry. I can't actually look up and check my records at the moment or check online to see what it was because I don't have any internet and I'm recording this offline. And so I might be getting the details wrong, but it was some industry that was looking for something like a £10 million rebate to prevent it from going under. And the government said they couldn't afford to do that, but then in the same breath, they spent something like £9.2 million on leaflets to promote the EU. So they can afford to spend £9.2 million on leaflets, but they can't afford £10 million to save an industry. And of course, secure the livelihood for many thousands of people who work within the industry, whom the government has enslaved to debt. And they do this sort of thing just to push it in people's face, folks, and let's not forget that this legislation was introduced by a man who had sex with the head of a dead pig in order to get the approval it takes to even become part of the elite clique that runs for politics. That's just the way the British political system works. And imagine doing that, folks. Imagine being told that that is the entrance fee to join this club. Is that really a club that you would want to join? Apparently something else that they had to do to join the club was burn a £50 note in front of a homeless person. So it just goes to show what sort of sociopaths and heartless individuals these politicians really are. And that's really just the tip of the iceberg too, folks. There's all sorts of stories about the initiation ceremonies of the Billington Boys, which is the club that I'm referring to, and it really does boggle the mind that these are the people that are put in place to run a country. But really, it's a good sign because it's a good thing for people to know because it shows just what you're up against and it shows how silly it is for anybody to even consider obeying the rules that these people put in place when really we should be rising up to throw these people out of power and replace them with someone of integrity. But of course, it's not just the British political system. I'd say that we see this type of activity in all Western politics, folks. These people really have no scruples and no morals, and they really do get up to some very nefarious activity behind closed doors and when people are not looking. And it really does happen everywhere, folks. Australian politics is certainly nothing to be proud of. Forced vaccinations or loss of government benefits, even forced chemotherapy for people as well, folks. This is forced medication. If a child happens to be diagnosed with cancer, parents are literally forced to give their children chemotherapy, and everybody knows that it's actually the chemo that kills the cancer patients and not the cancer. And that should be a concern for anybody, especially when we know that cancer is perfectly curable using cannabis oil. And it's an important thing to note that even though medical cannabis is being legalized across Australia, I believe, the oil is not being legalized. It's still illegal and forbidden to produce the oil. And it is the oil that cures cancer and the oil that is the most healing substance that you can create from the plant. I personally have cured testicular cancer, throat cancer, bowel cancer, stomach cancer, seen brain tumors reduced by 90%. I've cured Lyme's disease. I've cured lymphoma. I've cured skin cancer. And I've had people who've been given 6 months to live by the medical industry come and see me, and I've given them oil and cured them in 3 months, and they've gone away with a perfectly clean bill of health, much to the amazement of their doctors, simply by using cannabis oil. And that, of course, is why it is banned and why medical cannabis is being introduced, but it's going to be tightly regulated by the government. And, of course, the government will ensure that it doesn't really cure anything. Curing things isn't really what the government is all about. What the government is all about, by their own admission, is depopulation. You see, that's why there really is no point going to government for any type of remedy to any type of situation. What people need to realize is that it is the government that has created the situations they are seeking remedy for, and that should be a bit of a sign for them. And any idea you have and any remedy you find, you will need to get government approval in order to implement it. And just look at the past. Look at the track record of these people. Any great invention that's ever been invented that was going to free mankind from any type of servitude has always been squashed, has never received government approval, and people have just gone along with it, and they've put their inventions in the cupboard and just forgotten about it. Look at people like Nikola Tesla with the inventions that he created and the freedom that he could have established for mankind, but of course it was never allowed to happen. You look at the permaculture initiatives. We could be having permaculture in every single city on this earth, folks, in every suburb, in every garden. We could have the whole place a food forest. Anywhere where man is populating the place could be edible. The whole place could be an edible forest. Very easy to do, but we don't do it because the government won't let us do it. The government has a better idea and needs to regulate things. Look at Cobb Housing, look at Earthships, look at Adobe Housing. There are so many ways we can do things which are so much better than the way we do, and so many solutions to the problems that we have. There's people who have bacteria who eat oil spills. All sorts of things that can be done, folks. The whole Deepwater Horizon oil fiasco could have been cleaned up by friendly bacteria. I mean, there's so many ways we can do things, but the government won't let us. So why on earth would anyone seek remedy with government? There is no remedy to be found with government. The best you can hope for are legal loopholes which can serve to awaken people to the fact that there is no remedy in government. But that's about all you're going to get. You're never going to get any remedy by dealing with the system, not unless you do it in such a way that simply exploits a loophole in a manner that will awaken people. But that'd be about it, folks. There is no form you can fill out or contract you can enter into or send your birth certificate back or anything. There's nothing you can do to find remedy within the construct of government. What people need to do is realize that government is a fiction and unite together to step above the fiction. That's really the only remedy that will ever be found. And, you know, that's really why emancipation from slavery has been so difficult for mankind to achieve, because mankind is always looking for the silver bullet. They're always believing there is something that is going to come along which is going to give them the golden key to freedom, and they don't realize that that golden key lies within their heart, and indeed that is the only place it will ever be found. And if people are not prepared to stand up and simply be who they are and stand their ground and stand up for their rights and stand up for who and what they are, then they're never going to find a remedy. There is no piece of paper or form or contract you can use, folks. And if you enter into a contract which you believe will grant you remedy, if you're just going to go and wave this piece of paper in front of someone and say, now I'm free, then what makes you think you need the piece of paper to begin with? Because the fact is that you are already free if you choose to be that way. Sure, you might get a little bit of flack from government because they don't agree with you, but if everybody thinks that way, then the government really doesn't have anywhere to go. And again, it always comes back to that same old issue of disunited and thus disempowered communities. And that is where the remedy lies. It lies in your heart. Connect with the people around you and stand together to call this system out for what it is. And that will bring you remedy. And honestly, there is nothing else that will. You know, if you're not prepared to stand up for what you are, then you're not going to find a remedy in any piece of paper, any legislation or any contract, not a legal contract or a social contract. The only contract you need to enter into is one with yourself. You know, all of these things are savior programs, folks. All of them looking for the one contract or the one piece of paper that's going to free you, the one thing that you can do which is going to establish remedy for you. And again, it's always a narcissistic approach that we have. It's always freedom for me. And freedom for me within the confines and parameters that are acceptable by the system. There's even people who have worked out some quite good things. People who have back-engineered the entire legal system and created their own societies, their own domiciles. But again, they're establishing freedom in a small way, but only within the confines of the system and only for themselves. But they're forgetting what created the need for them to do that is the fact that, as I've said so many times before, this system is heading for the cliff and it's dragging the whole world with it. And that's the problem. You are still part of the world no matter what separate society you set up within the confines of this world. You're still going to be subject to the fate of this world. And when you have the rest of the world that is run by psychopaths and predators and are doing their best to destroy the place, well, it's not really going to matter about your little alternate society, no matter how good it may be and how legal it may be within the parameters of the system. The system is destroying the planet. It's destroying life. It's destroying the human race. It's destroying everything that's good about being alive and everything that's good about being human. That is the problem. Unless we address that, then it doesn't matter what sort of an alternate society or anything that we build. We simply can't ignore the problem that created the need for us to build that alternate society to begin with. And there is certainly no remedy in believing that we can do anything like that, folks. There isn't anything we can do. There is no alternate community or any alternate society we can build if we do not address the problem which created the need for us to do so. Until we do that, there is no remedy that will ever be found. You know, truly, folks, as I've said since the very beginning, since the first shows that I've done and since the first films that I've made, the only remedy we're ever going to find is going to be found within our hearts. It's understanding what we are and understanding the languages that we're speaking, because the languages that we speak are not just physical languages, they're not just verbal languages. There's also emotional languages and energetic languages, spiritual languages, languages of the heart, languages of the soul, if you will. But the language of the heart, the electromagnetic language of the heart, is the most important language that you can speak. It's the most important language to be aware of. Even when you get angry, and I do, I get angry, I rant, I rave. But when you have these rants, why are you doing them? Is it from frustration? That's understandable. Is it from passion? That's also understandable. If it's from anger, well, that's also understandable. What is the anger based in? Is the anger based in hatred of another? Or is it based in love? Is it based in your offense or your affront at what someone's done to somebody else or what someone's done to you? Is it righteous anger, or is it simply a reaction of the monkey mind? And how do you tell which is which? Well, are you seeking harm against someone, or are you seeking remedy for a situation? All of these sorts of things are really important, folks. When you're in any emotional state, it's important to express your emotion, but be aware of what you're centering that expression in. Is it hatred and fear, or is it love? And frustration and passion, these can be based in love, but they can also be based in hatred and fear. So you've really got to look at where you're centering yourself when you do get emotional and what sort of energy you're projecting into the field. And the energies are changing, folks. They just seem to be changing. The whole energetic field seems to be changing. People are more on edge. People are more snappy. People are more likely to react to the monkey mind. And everything just feels tenser and tighter. Reality feels like it's stretched out, like an elastic band that's ready to snap and go in whatever direction human consciousness dictates. And the question is, what direction is that going to be? And I think that direction will be based on the emotional state humanity is in. And that's why everything about this society is designed to keep us in fear, because that's the reality they want us in. They want to bring down the police state. They want to lock us down into this global prison. They want to implement the Kalergi plan. They want to do all of the things that they want to do. And it's up to us as to whether this is going to happen. It's up to the emotional state that we're in. It's up to whether we accept the fear that they put on us and whether we accept the authority they project upon us as well. And the authority is a big thing. The fear of authority, the fear of being beaten down by our local protectors of the peace, which is a terrible state that we seem to have got ourselves in. But folks, more and more people are seeing it. More and more people are waking up to the fact that this is the way the world is now. And there aren't too many people who are very happy with it. And that is a good thing, because it means that it's bringing about a wave of awakening and a tide of humanity that is beginning to see that there is a way out and there is a peaceful way out of this. And it is peaceful, folks. We don't need to have war. We don't need to have violence. I mean, sure, it may come to a point where we have to stand our ground, but I don't think there's going to be a problem with that. I think what we're going to see is a huge wave of mankind stand up to the plate and say enough is enough. But it's only going to happen when people choose to center themselves in the correct energetic state, folks. That's what it's all about. You know, if you're in that state of love, that state of not fear, then you can achieve amazing things. That's the state that I was in when I crawled through the tunnels into Gaza, and nothing could have touched me while I was in there. I was just in that state when nothing could have got near us. And when humanity chooses to recognize the power that lies dormant within them and chooses to step into that power and hold it up to shine to the world, I think we're going to see some real change. You know, I know I've been beating this same drum on air here for so many years now, but the thing is that I really do believe in mankind. I really do believe in our ability to rise above this mess. If people can simply realize what they are and realize the power that they hold, and not look for simple ways out, not look for the golden key, the golden ticket, the golden contract. Don't follow leaders, folks. Lead yourself, because that's really all that's going to change things, is when we can lead ourselves. When we stop giving our power away and giving our authority away, and that's a lot of what happens even in the independent media, that's a lot of what happens in the response to the system, is people find a radio host they like or a filmmaker they like or someone who tells the story the way they see it, and they put that person up on a pedestal and they follow them as a leader and hope that that person is going to change the world for them. But no one person can do it. No one man has the key. No one man has the remedy. It's got to come from a wave of humanity. It's got to come from the hearts of each and every man and woman that is alive in the world. We just need to remember. We just need to remember ourselves. We just need to remember what we've got here. We just need to remember that it's only people. The government is only people. All of this control mechanism is just people. All the money system, the people who run it, they're just people. All the wars, they're just people who fight the wars because other people tell them to. It's just people doing all of this stuff. You know, as Carl Jung once said, mankind is the origin of all coming evil, and he is pitifully unaware of it. We really are, folks. We are the origin of all of our problems. All of the issues that we see in the world today, the mayhem, the wars, the starvation, all of the problems that we see, anything, doesn't matter what it is, any problem that we see on the earth today, we are the origin of that problem. We are the origin of that evil. It's the thoughts that we have, the emotional state that we center ourselves in, the reactionary monkey brain, the need to dominate others, the need to own a piece of the ground. When you can't own a piece of the ground owns you. As soon as you claim ownership of the ground owns you. You can never leave that piece of ground. You're stuck to it. The whole thing is backwards, folks. We've been taught to look at things from the reverse of what they should be. And in doing so, we've lost sight of ourselves, we've lost sight of reality, we've lost sight of our very purpose for being here. And now is a time of great awakening. If we can seize the opportunities that this life is providing for us, the opportunities that all of these crises we see around the planet are providing for us, all we have to do is see the opportunities these things provide and see the power that we hold within each of us to stand up and change things. And don't follow leaders. Look to yourself. You are your own salvation. And that goes for every man, woman, and child on the planet. And when people realize that, we're going to change the world very, very quickly. I just wonder when the day is going to come. And you know, you don't really have to do anything that big or that large, folks. All you've got to do is make ripples where you live and get to know the people around you and be a shining light in the community where you live. You know, we can all influence the people around us by leading by example in all that we do. We can all influence the people around us by being the best that we can be and help them to be the best that they can be by our example that we set for them. And we get opportunities to do this every single day. In fact, every moment of every day. And that doesn't mean that you've always got to be perfect. That doesn't mean that you're always going to be this guru walking around shining this white light at everybody. It doesn't mean that you're not going to mess up. It doesn't mean you're not going to do or say the wrong thing sometimes. But it's being aware of it, folks, and being able to correct yourself when it happens. And if you can't correct yourself at the time, well, maybe look back and reflect and maybe correct yourself a little bit later. But do correct yourself. And do be aware of what you're doing with your emotions. And do be aware of what energy you're centering yourself in. You know, I really believe this is a huge, huge time for mankind. One of the most important times in history. And we have every opportunity here to make reality exactly what we want it to be. And it would be a shame if we missed out on it. It would be a shame if we just sat back and let things unfold the way they want. It would be a shame if we turned to leaders and allowed people to lead us to what they believe their version of paradise is when it may not be what we want at all. You know, it's a collective consciousness, folks. It's a collective reality. It's a collective projection, and it requires a collective participation. And that means all of you, everybody. You know, we can all see that there's a problem. We can all see the reality we would want. We can all see what freedom looks like, or at least have an idea of what we think freedom should look like in our minds. And we can all work to make that happen in our own respective environment, in our own respective community. And that's where it's got to start. It's got to start with grassroots. It's got to start with ripples on the ground where we live. I mean, even if we were to create some sort of a magic key, how would we ever implement it if we didn't do it from a grassroots level anyway? Even if we had the magic key or the magic bullet or the magic contract or anything that was going to work, we would still have to take the steps to initiate it on the ground where we live. There wouldn't be someone who could stand up and do it for us. We would have to do it ourselves. So why not just do it without letting anybody else get in the way? Why do we think we need leaders to lead us to that point when all we really have to do is stand up and do it ourselves? When we get a leader to do this for us and to lead us to that point, all we are doing is ensuring that we will never do it for ourselves and we will never take responsibility, the responsibility that we need to take if we are ever to establish freedom. Because that's what freedom is, folks. Freedom is being completely responsible for who and what you are, and for the things you do, and for the things that you say. It's being responsible for all your actions, and being responsible for your own life. That's what freedom is. And that's why it is such an elusive thing. Because everybody wants to be free, but there are very few who want to accept the responsibility it takes to be that way. Now, to end the show on something of a personal note, recently you may have seen me post a video which received many thousands of views entitled Maxi and Off-Air Uncensored and Unplugged, the Flat Earth and Santos Bonacci Rant. And you may have also noticed that that video has now been deleted from YouTube. Now, I'd like to explain that video a little bit and why it's been deleted. Originally, the video was posted simply out of sheer frustration at the amount of personal attacks I'd had from flat earthers and also the amount of attacks and defamatory abuse that I had been subject to by Santos Bonacci. Santos having blocked me on Facebook and me being unable to contact him on Skype, I published that rant in a state of sheer frustration, again in a reactionary response, again in the monkey mind. However, last week I managed to contact Santos and we had a bit of a conversation And after talking to him, which is the first time I have talked to him in many months, I heard it in his voice that Santos is having an extremely difficult time at the moment. He's having to deal with a lot of emotional trauma, and he's having to deal with a lot of legal trauma as well. He's got some really big issues in his life at the moment, folks, and because he's feeling cornered and he's having what I would only describe as a breakdown of sorts, he is naturally lashing out at those that he loves the most and those that are most closest to him. This is unfortunately a pretty common trait in human nature. And I think Santos deeply regrets his recent actions, and I'd like to reach out to people out there in the internet world who are creating memes about Santos and posting them everywhere and posting derogatory remarks about him everywhere. I'd like you to understand that this is a man in a state of extreme emotional crisis who really desperately needs friends at the moment, ladies and gentlemen. He really does. And I think it is quite cruel for people to be purposefully ridiculing a man who is in a state of real need at the moment and in a state where we could all step into our humanity and reach out to this individual and show how human we can really be. I mean, admittedly, I did post that rant. As I said, I posted it in a state of sheer frustration. There was no other way I could even get hold of Santos. And it was originally posted unintentionally. Again, the reason I posted it on YouTube is because I was contacted by so many people who said that they liked it and I should post it. And even looking back at that, I have to question the motivation of people suggesting that I should post it, because what for? Why were people pushing me into a reaction when it's not really my nature to do so? Perhaps it's just their monkey mind kicking in. Perhaps it's part of the same problem. But looking back on it, I find it quite interesting how the whole thing went down. I don't regret posting it. I think it needed to be said. I think it served to clear the air in many ways. But again, I have removed it simply out of respect for Santos and because I do not wish to contribute any more to the crisis he is already suffering. And I really hope that people out there will think about this and think about removing the memes that they've created and perhaps reaching out to support this man in his hour of need. And regardless of what you think about him, folks, regardless of what you think of his work, regardless of what you think about Flat Earth, regardless of what your issues are on anything, this is a human being who is in a state of need, and we are all human beings, and I think that if we can put our differences aside, we'll find that there's a great lesson here for all of us. But look, that is it for me, folks. I'm pretty well at the end of the show. It's been a pleasure coming on and talking to you today. I don't know when I'm going to get another show out for you. I will try to get one done over the next month or two, but I'm actually going to be away traveling on the road until the 25th of May. And I'm not sure how many shows I will be able to get done for you between now and then, but I will try to get some done. But thank you very much for all the time you have spent listening to the shows, and thank you very much for all the support you've given me. Again, the Patreon account that I've set up is there, and it would be absolutely wonderful if people could contribute to it. I'd really like to get it to a point where I could even employ someone to help me. It would be wonderful to have an assistant, so maybe I could double the output of material and actually not have to do this whole thing on my own the way I have been for the last 8 years. It would be great to have a helper around that I could actually pay for their time. So who knows? Wonderful things could happen if people want it to happen. But again, folks, it's only going to be listener support that keeps the show on air. So if you do enjoy the show and you have got something from the shows over the years and you enjoy the films, then please do consider making some sort of a monthly contribution to keep the work going. But that is it for me now, folks. I've reached the end of the show. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I'll look forward to speaking to you when I'm next able to do so. Don't forget, I am speaking at the Free Your Mind Conference the day after tomorrow on the 17th of April. I'm also speaking in Ohio on the 29th and 30th of April. You'll find the details to that on my website, thecrowhouse.com. I'm also speaking at AV7 at Horwood House in England on the 13th of May, and I'm speaking at the Open Mind Conference in Amsterdam on the 21st of May. So I look forward to seeing anybody who's in those areas at those gigs, if you can possibly make it, and I look forward to speaking to you next time I'm able. And please do take very good care. Until then, my friends, in Lakesh.